Welcome to Local Talk, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Thank you for listening in. I am one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with my co-host, Joe Lynch. Joe, this is your very first gig as a Local Talk co-host.
That's right, Ursula. Glad to be here. And welcome to the listener. We have a weather report for you this morning. It's a little cold out.
Von Kettleson of Carroll Broadcasting from Carroll, Iowa, is a new contributor to Local Talk. He submits this report featuring ISU Extension climatologist Elwin Taylor.
This is Von Kettleson here on KHOI Community Radio visiting with ISU Extension climatologist Dr. Elwin Taylor. Certainly had our share of cold weather here this past weekend, Elwin. What's coming up for the week ahead here?
Well, we noticed Sunday afternoon that the winds had started to be gentle and from the south. Not all the way from the Gulf of Mexico, but at least coming up from in this deep south, Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas area. And they weren't warm, but at least it's warmer than coming down from the North Pole area. And we have had an Arctic flow of air that has been into the area off and on now for a couple of weeks. Well, that doesn't mean that this is going to be gone, but it does mean that the middle of the week here, we're going to get some above freezing temperatures. And we may tomorrow have 36 for a high. And it could be Wednesday and Thursday. Maybe even as we get into Friday, we will have temperatures probably not 40 degrees, but well into the 30s. Then Saturday and Sunday, we might be right back to temperatures not getting up to the melting point, staying below freezing all day. Nighttime temperatures during this period, mostly in the 20s, of course, we've been seeing them in the teens or in the single digits below zero even, and maybe a double or two as we look around the state. Any chance of snow coming up? Well, we do anticipate that there's some chance on Wednesday, but we're not talking about an 80%. That's more like a 20% chance, but it could happen. Will we have any precipitation in the 6 to 10 day outlook? We're actually expecting that to be near normal temperatures, and yes, slightly above usual chance of precipitation. But remember, December and January are our two driest months of the year in central Iowa. And so if we have a slightly above usual chance of precipitation, that is still not a whole lot. Well, it can look like a whole lot because, of course, in the winter, that inch of precipitation, that is an inch of rain if it had fallen as rain, if it falls as snow, it would likely be a foot of snow. That's about the conversion. Every foot of snow, if you melted it down, would be about an inch of moisture. Of course, if it's powdery snow, not that much. If it's real heavy snow, more. And snow's a little bit inconsistent that way. With the outlook to take us all the way up to the first of the year, we do anticipate that we'll, by that time, be having temperatures warmer than usual and still maybe slightly above the usual chance of precipitation. And that will get us into January. We'll start off January with a thaw. Too early to tell on that. But nevertheless, it's feeling like a real winter, not necessarily a harsh winter, but not a mild one either. Things looking a little bit more normal than they have for the past couple of years.
All right. ISU Extension climatologist Dr. Elwin Taylor joining us. Von Kettleson on KHOI Community Radio.
That report was provided by Von Kettleson from Carroll Broadcasting. Thank you, Von.
KHOI has been raising funds during the past month. This is our end-of-the-year fund drive, and as your co-host this morning, I want to give you an update on how we've done. We hope to raise $25,000 to get a $25,000 match that has been offered by some of our longtime supporters. And the good news is we are now at $29,150. Our other goal for this fall was 50 new members. Glad to report we are now at 53 new members as of last evening. It's my pleasure to give you this fabulous news. We'd love to reach $30,000 so we can keep those donations coming. I'm actually quite optimistic. We've got 2 weeks left yet during this year, and we often have people who want to contribute before the year's over. So this is pretty exciting, Ursula.
Most of all, thank you to everyone who has joined and donated for contributing to the station's success. It's really been an effort of the whole team at the station, and everybody's feeling great about the fact that we've reached our goal. With the matching funds, we've raised around $55,000 now. These are vital funds for paying for KHOI's operations. Joe, how far does the $55,000 go to supporting the station's operations?
Well, that's about a third of what we hope to raise during this coming year to really do a great job of meeting our potential as community-based radio here in Central Iowa.
About a third. Okay. If we have more money now, that means we have to raise less money during the year. So if you've not donated yet to KHOI, the website is khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. Please keep considering KHOI in your plan for donating this year. We are real close to 30,000. It would be great to reach 30,000. In fact, I'd like to reach 35,000.
Exactly. It's exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth, Ursula. 35 is my goal.
Okay, great. So, but most of all, just a big thank you to everybody who has joined KHOI in the last month. We're very appreciative of the support that, you know, the community of Central Iowa has shown for community radio.
This is fabulous, locally owned community radio, folks, and you're doing a great job of supporting what we're up to.
Okay, Joe Lynch, Chair of KHOI Board. And this is KHOI. Thank you for the update, Joe. And thank you for your contribution to making this happen, Joe, and for your leadership.
I've got plenty to be thankful for. I haven't got a great big yacht to sail from shore to shore. Still, I've got plenty to be thankful for. I've got plenty to be thankful for. No private car, no caviar, no carpet on my floor. Still, I've got plenty to be thankful for. I've got eyes to see with, ears to hear with, arms to hug with, lips to kiss with, someone to adore. How could anybody ask for more? My needs are small, I buy them all at the 5 and 10 cent store. Oh, I've got plenty to be thankful for.
Bing Crosby singing Plenty to Be Thankful For, and we are thankful to our supporters. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with Joe Lynch, Chair of the Board, an auspicious Local Talk with the Board Chair here to say thank you to you as well for support for KHOI. And every month we feature a community service organization on Local Talk. This morning we are featuring MICA, Mid-Iowa Community Action, and specifically the food pantry that they operate here in Ames. There were reports recently that the pantry was running low on food. Local Talk reporter Kay Puttock inquired about this, and this is her report.
My guest is Josie Stalen,
from MICA. That's Mid-Iowa Community Action. Welcome, Josie. I asked Josie to come because of the shortage that we've heard about at the MICA food pantry. How's that going now, Josie? Are you still short on supplies?
Well, actually, Kay, due to the holidays, we usually do see an increase in the amount of donations that we see. So the past November and into December, we have seen an increase in our donations, which we are really, really grateful for. We just hope to see this continue into the spring and summer, just because the holidays aren't the only time that people are in need of food.
Right. Yeah, I was surprised. Someone from MICA once told me that one of the worst times is in the summer, actually, which is surprising because people are producing so much produce from their gardens. But I guess in the holiday time, in the winter, they tend to think of it more, perhaps.
Yes, I think it's just one of those things that the holidays are a time of giving. It's more on people's mind. It's more present. But in the summertime, springtime, families are still coming in and needing food, so we are still needing to keep our pantry stocked.
Right. Now, do you have any idea why you had such a shortage that you ran out completely?
I think it could be due to any number of reasons, but we did have an increase in numbers, which could be contributed to any number of factors, but we can't really pinpoint exactly what it was.
Now, when people come into the food pantry, just by showing up, they're declaring a need. Do you ask them any questions or do they fill out any forms or anything?
We collect basic demographic information to help us with data collection. But by walking in our doors, they are establishing that they have a need. And they do mark down on a form that they, have a need for food. But other than that, we're happy to serve.
And is there any limitation on the number of times they can come, say a month or a week?
Families can come once a month to our food pantry. It used to be every 30 days, but recently we have changed it to once a calendar month a family can come in and utilize mm-hmm. the food pantry. And in that time that they come to the pantry, they're given the amount of food to sustain their household size for up to 3 to 5 days. It's kind of an emergency
right.
food package that we give them.
So it's certainly not a whole month's supply.
No, definitely not.
So it's just a help for them.
Yes, it's helping them to supplement, what they might already have.
Mm-hmm. And the kinds of things you get normally are non-perishable things, canned goods, dry goods, dry pasta, things like that.
Yes. Like you said, canned fruits and veggies, soups, dry pasta, pasta sauce. Toiletry items are a big thing that we also give out, and sometimes I think can be forgotten along with food.
Right, like baby diapers, for example.
Diapers, yeah. Toilet paper, paper towels, soap, shampoo, conditioner. Those things, when we have them on hand, we also try to give those out as well because they're also things.
Yeah,
laundry soap.
The price of that adds up. When
right,
I was a widowed graduate student, I remember how expensive. I'd go and buy basic toothpaste and things like that. And
right, yeah, toothpaste, toothbrushes.
It diminished my supply of money a lot.
Definitely. So when we have those on hand, those are also things that we're including in families' food that we give them.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, we appreciate every single donation that we get as soon as, it goes out the door pretty quickly as soon as we get it. So it's really appreciated. And even if you don't have the money or the food to donate, we also love to have volunteers at our office mm-hmm. to donate their time because there's a lot of behind-the-scenes work that goes
sure.
into the food pantry.
Right, I bet.
That you might not think about right away. So we love to have volunteers. We love our volunteers. If you have donated or volunteered even your time, it's really appreciated. And if it's something you're thinking about doing, please feel free to give me a call. My name is Josie, and we'd be happy to work with you on a food drive or even just an individual donation.
So what kinds of things do the volunteers do, just to give people an idea?
So when food comes in the door, it's got to be weighed because we keep track of the amount of food that we get donated. So it's got to be weighed, it's got to be date checked, and it's got to be shelved on our shelves. Then once it's there, it has to be put into the pre-packaged bags for families according to their family size. So it has to be sorted that way. So even keeping up just with this time of year in the holidays, too, when we are seeing a little bit more donations, getting it all put away and getting the bags ready to go on the shelves for the families, because when they come in the door, we like to have it ready to go
sure.
to get to them right away. So there's a lot of work that goes in behind it.
Okay. And I know my church has a big box for people to bring stuff when they come to church to go to the food pantry. So that's something we could remind people of. Probably your church already has one.
But if not, you might speak to the relevant people at church and get a box put up there. Because people, sometimes when they're going to church in the morning, it's more in their mind, and it's just one trip then. Instead of going to church and to the food pantry, they can do it in one trip. So
certainly. And if anybody ever has any questions about if something is okay to donate, you know, I get questions all the time about certain things. So don't hesitate to call our office. We'd be more than happy to talk with you about it and let you know. We welcome questions and inquiries, so give us a call, and we'd love to work with you. And another thing that I'd like to mention is that we are a member of the Food Bank of Iowa, so that means we're able to purchase food from the food bank at a lesser price than a person could go to the grocery store and buy it. So that's why a monetary donation can also help us stretch our food pantry a longer way, because your dollar is going to be stretched further when we purchase it from the Food Bank of Iowa, rather than, you know, going to a store to get it.
So that's right. So monetary contributions end up buying more than people could buy individually.
Yes, which is something that I learned when I was new to this position, and I thought was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's tell people the contact information, the phone number, and the website again.
So our address is located at 230 Southeast 16th Street in Ames. You can drop donations off there. Also, our phone number is 515-956-3333.
Let's say that again,
515-956-3333.
Okay.
Or you can visit micaonline.org. So that's micaonline.org.
Okay. Thank you very much, Josie Stalen from MICA.
Thank you for having me.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe. Help to make the season bright, so bright.
Tiny tots with their eyes all aglow, we'll find it.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, 89.1 on your FM dial. I'm one of your hosts this morning, Joe Lynch, here with Ursula Rutenberg. Maybe many of you know that. Chestnuts are native to eastern North America. The American chestnut tree was one of the most important forest trees on the continent. In the first half of the 20th century, the tree was devastated by a fungal disease. Accidentally, I think, introduced into North America, where Asiatic chestnut trees were imported and planted in New York City. It's estimated that 3 to 4 billion American chestnut trees were killed by the blight. Many consider the destruction of this tree the greatest historical environmental disaster on the continent.
You may have noticed that Wheatsfield Co-op, if you shop there, is selling chestnuts these days, and they are currently in season, much to our benefit. These chestnuts are advertised as being from Iowa, so we became curious about that. And as it turns out, Iowa has 6 chestnut orchard farms. The ones in Wheatfield come from an orchard called J&B Chestnuts in Winfield, Iowa, in southeastern Iowa, just south of Iowa City. Reporter Susan Franson called John Wittrig, the owner of J&B Chestnuts, to tell us about the sad past and hopeful future for Iowa chestnuts. The J&B is John and Betty Wittrig in J&B Chestnuts. If you listen carefully, you'll even get some trade secrets from John.
Well, my name is John Wittrig. I live in Winfield, Iowa.
How did you decide to start a chestnut farm?
Well, I grew up near Winfield, and I'm an only child, and I inherited my parents' grain farm. Before my mother passed away, she asked me to help her manage the farm that it was going to be mine, and I found out that the USDA, the government, paid rent to conservation-minded people who wanted to plant trees. So we planted some trees on the grain farm, on the hillier parts of the grain farm. And to make a long story short, my wife was from North Carolina, She always said the trees are prettier in North Carolina than anywhere else. Well, I thought the trees were sort of pretty in Iowa. Once we planted trees on the grain farm, we started going to forestry extension field days that the Iowa State foresters from Ames came down to southern Iowa and had the state forest near Farmington. And going there one day in the fall, some fellow said to us, "Have you ever tasted chestnuts?" And we said, "Oh, yeah, we were in Chicago on State Street at Christmas time several years ago, and we decided to try roasted chestnuts, and they tasted awful." And he said, "Well, the reason they did was that those were imported chestnuts, and they were spoiled, and the guys doing the roasting didn't take care of them. These are fresh. I just raised them here. You ought to try some." So we did, and they didn't taste bad, but we got to thinking about it, and we had a little bit of land actually here in Winfield. It wasn't part of the big farm. It was a four-acre patch, and so in 1993, we had done a little reading on chestnuts, and we planted 279 chestnut seedling trees in 93. And we didn't know what would happen to them or whether we would ever get chestnuts or what we would do with them, but we have since found out.
If my calculation is right, this must be about 24 years ago?
Yeah, 23, 24 years ago, yeah. We got our first crop in 97, and 4 years after we had planted. Some of the seedlings were 2 years old and some were 1 year old, so by the time they were 4 and 5 years old, we started getting a few, and I started learning about chestnuts and about fresh chestnuts and who would buy them, how to sell them, and all those things. This crop year, we got 8,500 pounds, and they are all sold. We found out that there weren't very many diseases other than the chestnut blight that knocked out the American chestnut trees totally from 1904 to 1944. The Chinese chestnut trees they get the blight, but they grew up with it, and they have an immune system that protects them, and so there weren't too many things that affect chestnuts. There's the chestnut weevil, the greater and lesser chestnut weevil, but it hasn't ever made its presence felt here in our part of Iowa. So there's nothing to spray for, and we had planted the chestnuts on the inner 3 acres of the 4 acres, and so we have gotten them qualified and certified as organic, and so we sell to organic co-ops, grocery stores like Wheatfield and Ames, like a lot of Hy-Vees around the Midwest, we ship them a lot into the eastern states. Eastern people know more about chestnuts or remember more about chestnuts, perhaps, than anybody else, I guess. So we sell 75 to 90% of our sales are repeat sales to organic co-ops and grocery stores.
And how do they get to the market?
We UPS them. We have a large garage here next to the house, and that's our chestnut sorting and handling place. And I have three grandsons, but one of them lives here in town, and he helps me package. He's my local chestnut manager. I'm the salesman, and we have one other fellow that helps us when it comes harvesting time, and we harvest by hand and pack by hand, sort by hand, and we have a unique packaging system that nobody else in the industry does. But I think that's one of the reasons we have so many repeat sales, because our packaging system keeps our chestnuts from spoiling and keeps them fresh in refrigeration much longer than the industry, who packages them in plastic, and we package in four thicknesses of craft paper. I learned that from one of my customers who called early on in she had read an article in the Cedar Rapids Gazette. This was early December, and she said, "You have chestnuts." And I said, "Well, we had chestnuts, but we're all sold out." And she said, "Oh, I'm so sorry, but could I come see the trees? I haven't seen a chestnut tree since I left Korea 30 years ago." And it turned out that Angie had married an Iowa farmer, and she grew up with chestnut trees in her yard in Korea. She lives in West Branch, Iowa, about 70 miles from here. And I finally asked her how she kept hers, because I knew that she and Richard kept theirs much longer than anybody else. They would get a large batch of chestnuts from us and keep them. She said, "Oh, I keep mine in four thicknesses of craft paper bags, paper grocery bags, in the refrigerator." Of course, chestnuts are not really nuts botanically. They're the fruit of the chestnut tree, but nobody calls them chest fruits. So I took my cue from the way she packaged them, and we package ours in 10-pound packages, two paper grocery bags put together. And fold them up, and we refrigerate them generally within 24 hours after they're picked up. We pick them up every day over a six-week period, September and October. Those are the chestnut months. The media and the American public really don't remember much about chestnuts, except they're musically misinformed that chestnuts are roasted over an open fire at Christmas time, and that's what the majority of the American public still think of chestnuts as a Christmas nut, which they're not. Everywhere else in the world, as soon as chestnuts are ripe, people are crazy for them. There are many, many recipes for chestnuts, not just roasted over an open fire.
Or in a chestnut stuffing.
Well, I peddle a cookbook. Annie Bagwandon wrote a cookbook several years ago. She grew up in Cajun country, but she met her husband at the University of Indiana in Bloomington. And she writes how she and Omroa used to, and some other students used to ride their bikes out from Bloomington in the fall and harvest chestnuts and apples and pears and supplement their diet that way. After she and Omroa were married, they took some trips, and she has written the chestnut cookbook, and there's about almost 100 recipes for all sorts of things. So not only soups and meat dishes and vegetable dishes, but desserts, marvelous desserts with chestnuts. And I order 100 of these at a time. They retail for $12.95, but I get them for about $7. And I've probably peddled at least 600, I guess, over the years. One of my hopes is that people will begin to use chestnuts as they're used around the rest of the world. They're actually the third most important agricultural crop in China, and they're very much a very nutritious food. And besides that, they're a sustainable crop to grow, and I'm concerned about the loss of the soil due to erosion with the current way we farm our land. If you grow corn or soybeans, the USDA says you lose an average of 5 tons of topsoil a year, and we've already lost half of the topsoil that Iowa started out with before it was settled and farmed the way we farm now. And if you plant trees you might lose a teaspoon of topsoil per acre per year. So, and you don't have to plow every year. So part of my goal is to get people to start using chestnuts as a food source. They call chestnuts the corn that grows on trees.
Who calls it the corn that grows on trees?
Chestnut people do. It certainly is a carbohydrate. It's not an oily nut. It's a fruit of the chestnut tree. So it is much more similar to corn and beans and potatoes.
Is it sweet at all?
The secret of good chestnuts is that when they're ripe, they're about 50% water. As they lose that water, the starches turn to sugars. And so it is known as the sweet nut. Now, it's not overpoweringly sweet, but it's sweet, kind of like a sweet potato.
You mentioned the chestnut blight, but you didn't tell the story of the chestnut. Could you tell what they were at their peak and what happened?
Okay, well, the American chestnut tree, Castanea dentata, was a marvelous looking tree. It grew particularly in Appalachia. It grew to heights of 100 feet or 110 feet, with trunks 6 and 7 feet in diameter. However, in 1904, the workers at Central Park in New York discovered that the chestnut trees in Central Park, of which there were many, actually a third of the eastern forest in 1904, the third of the eastern forest in this country were the American chestnut tree variety. And they were marvelous wood. The wood does not rot readily at all. It was used for railroad ties and for buildings and for furniture and everything. But by 1944, well, there was a great alarm about the blight that they found was killing the American chestnut tree. But it spread about 50 miles a year, and by 1944, the end of World War II, 99% of the American chestnut trees were dead. And that was a catastrophe. That was a big catastrophe for trees in general and everything. The Chinese chestnut, which is what we have planted, has just as sweet a nut, somewhat larger than the American chestnut nuts were. And the Chinese chestnuts grew up with the blight. So they developed an immune system, and so they do get the blight, but they don't die. And that's sort of what happened to the American chestnut tree and the American awareness of chestnuts just disappeared. People have been trying to crossbreed the American chestnut, the very few that they find, with the Chinese chestnut and get a variety that would be blight resistant, but that hasn't happened in any appreciable amount yet.
How were the Chinese chestnuts introduced? Did they, right away when they started to die off, did people bring in the Chinese chestnuts, or were they brought in by accident, or how did that happen?
There were some Chinese chestnuts brought in, and probably that's where the blight came from.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. That was John Wittrig, Iowa chestnut farmer, speaking with KHOI's Susan Franson. I am one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, here with Joe Lynch, local organic farmer. Any last words about chestnuts, Joe?
I do, Ursula. If you were fortunate enough to dig around in my fridge right now, you'd find some chestnuts from West Ames. I have a secret stash. I know where there are 2 chestnut trees.
Okay, so where is that secret stash?
I'm not about to tell you.
That's all right. We're alone.
And I roasted some yesterday. It's a fabulous thing to do.
Yeah.
Find some chestnuts and go roast them. You'll be glad you did.
This is how you roast a chestnut. You take the nut and you make a slit across the middle of it so that it doesn't explode when it's heated. And then you just throw it in the oven for about 15 minutes.
That's right.
And that's it.
Peel it and eat it.
Right. And secret tip, chestnuts actually have no fat in them. And
that's
so
right.
They are the only so-called nut who are not fattening.
They're delicious.
In fact, they're not really nuts, as
you
said.
They're a little bit sweet. They're just wonderful.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire. Jack Frost nipping at your nose.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Dan Culhane has joined us for the monthly check-in from the Ames Chamber of Commerce. As you may know, Dan is President and Chief Executive Officer of the Chamber of Commerce in Ames. Welcome back, Dan.
Well, thank you. I don't know a thing about chestnuts, but I think I'd like to try them.
Oh, they're fabulous. So, Dan, as the year comes to an end, please review for us what major things have occurred with the Chamber and just give us a little bit of a review of the year.
Yeah, well, happy to, and thanks for having me this morning. And we're proud to be a sponsor of KHOI.
Thank
it's a
you.
Great community service and a great relationship we have with your organization, Ursula. You know, 2016 was another good year, actually a great year here in Ames. And, you know, routinely I think you can say that about the Ames community, the vibrancy of our marketplace, the growth of the university, the types of offerings and opportunities we enjoy and we get to experience here in Ames makes Ames really special. As we talk about 2016, the things that I think I'll remember most are the improvements of the Ames Municipal Airport and the modernization of the airport.
So tell us just a little bit about that.
Sure. We raised about $1.1 million as an organization to privately fund a new transient airport or aircraft hangar. It's about 12,000 square feet. As aircraft fly into Ames, particularly this time of year, pilots like to get those aircraft out of the elements. And so this hangar will allow that to occur. And that's something we're pretty pleased with. The city has recently broken ground on the new terminal. That's under construction. So I think you'll see a lot of nice improvements at the municipal airport.
So when you say there's a hangar, that you mean that if people have private airplanes, they – the airport now accommodates having them stay inside. I'm kind of trying to turn this into lay language here.
Yep. So right now there are a lot of hangars out there already where private aircraft that are based here in Ames are housed. What I'm talking about is, let's say the Texas Tech basketball team comes in January. They usually fly in here. Right now they tie the plane down outside. So that it doesn't blow away. They can pull it inside, keep the ice off the wings so that they can leave after the game.
Okay. So you have a barn for your horse now.
Exactly.
When you come to Ames.
Exactly. It's a glorified garage, right? Yeah.
Very
so,
nice.
So there's the airport. At the same time, we spent a lot of energy in the last 18 months on annexing about 1,350 acres east of Barilla, east of the interstate. We see that as a very logical location for further business development. In particular with the Union Pacific Railroad that sits out there and runs parallel to that area. So we initiated the annexation process on behalf of the city.
So that means that it's been zoned for industry? Is that what annexation means?
Annexation ultimately means that it'll be brought into the city. So that property is currently in the unincorporated part of Story County.
Mm-hmm.
The city of Ames now is exercising the annexation process, and by law, the city has 5 years to deploy infrastructure into an area where they annex.
So the city has become a little bit bigger towards
yes,
the east.
Yes, it will. Yeah, that process is moving forward. We don't have two or three companies or even one at this point in our pocket that are going to announce that they're locating out there after this is complete. But this is not pure speculation. We understand the types of industries that will want to locate out there, and we're encouraged by the annexation process.
Now, in annexation, is the land bought by the city, or is it just private land that's been rezoned that can be sold to industry, or how does that work?
Good question. No, so The property remains in the hands of the owners. And that's, as we talked to owners out there during the annexation process or during the discussion, we said, if you never want to sell your property, if you want to farm it forever, you can. That's your right. You know, the city is only bringing into the mark, into the corporate limits so they can deploy infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And so if someone wants to sell, they can. If they don't, they don't have to. Mm-hmm. And as you know, or I think you know, there's enough black dirt here in central Iowa that condemnation or eminent domain, those types of things aren't in the language here. They just don't happen here in Ames. And frankly, they don't need to. Mm-hmm. And so we think there's plenty of options out there for business if they choose to locate there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, from the chamber side, we had a really strong year for membership. You know, we are a membership organization. Mm-hmm. We're around 600 members. Our growth has been very rapid. And at the same time, we had some really cool events this past year. Mm-hmm. For sports enthusiasts, we had Brent Musburger and Fran Fraschilla, who spoke at our annual dinner back in January.
And who are they?
They're basketball announcers, and Brent Musburger has been around for 100 years and uh-huh. has been a longtime announcer for a variety of sporting events. Mm-hmm. So that was fun. And then we also do the very traditional after hours, the golf day, and things of that nature, too, that make us who we are.
Yeah.
And one of the things we did this in October was we started a leadership series that we're going to continue into 2017, a thing called Jump. And it was Jump Into Your Next Leadership Opportunity, whatever that may be. You know, we really encourage people to get involved, to plug into their community.
So is this part of Leadership Ames?
No, Leadership Ames is really a part of this.
Okay.
And so we brought in a speaker to talk about leadership, and we had a great crowd. We anticipate more of that in 2017.
Uh-huh. But Leadership Ames itself isn't having an anniversary.
Leadership Ames turned 30 this year, which is really incredible for anything to run that long.
That is such a long run.
It is.
Can you explain real briefly what
sure.
it is?
The long and the short of Leadership Ames is every year there's an application process. There's 18 to 25 or so people that get selected from our membership, and we take them through a series of programs over about 9 months, one day a month for about 9 months. They learn more about the medical community, the university, local government, charitable organizations, the social groups here in town, a wide variety of things across the community. At the end of the day, Leadership Ames is really to encourage people, or maybe even push people a little bit, to plug into the community in which they live. It could be the Little League board, it could be their church board, it could be serving as a volunteer DJ here at KHOI Radio. Whatever it might be, we want people to plug into the community.
Mm-hmm. And these are people that are from the businesses or organizations that are part of the Ames Chamber of Commerce.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What else has happened in 2017? Can you talk a little bit about the Lincoln Way's corridor survey?
Sure. Yeah, the city of Ames implemented or hired a consultant out of Chicago to look at the Lincoln Way corridor as it runs through Ames. How can we make it better? How can traffic move more smoothly? How can different types of traffic be incorporated into that corridor? And as development evolves and occurs over time, do we have any plans in place as a community for how that should work best? And so we're keenly aware, and we're very interested in that, because we continue to hear from lots of people who say, hey, you know, we'd like to be on Lincoln Way. We'd like to do something on Lincoln Way. But we need some direction from really the city of Ames. And this plan that the city of Ames is, I believe, going to adopt will give some direction and latitude to people as they look at redevelopment or modernization of properties along Lincoln Way.
When you say people say they want to be on Lincoln Way, are you talking about businesses that would like to build on Lincoln Way, or who are these people?
Sure. You think about all the redevelopment you've seen on Duff Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
Think of some of the redevelopment you've seen way out west, out by the Hy-Vee. There's a new Sports Page restaurant there. There's a couple new buildings there with some residential above the main floor. We think you'll see more of that along Lincoln Way, particularly in the downtown area. We really need more density in a lot of this area instead of single-story buildings with a very large parking lot on the backside.
Is there land for sale along Lincoln Way?
Yes and no. You know, one of the challenges in Ames, and really this is a challenge in university communities and or very large markets in general, is that more often than not, land that's probably best suited for redevelopment is usually full. Mm-hmm. Meaning somebody lives there, somebody has a business there. We were in Manhattan, Kansas about 8 months ago to do an intercity visit. And Manhattan, Kansas has done a lot of redevelopment downtown. But the difference between Manhattan when they did that and Ames today is that no matter how great or how ordinary the building might be that sits along that corridor, there's probably somebody paying rent in it. And so somebody's making money based upon that current structure. And so in Manhattan, many buildings were vacant, and so it was easier for the city to go in. It's easier to buy something that nobody wants than something that somebody's renting or somebody's using for commerce. And so I think that's the challenge, is that property tends to be very expensive in Ames because it's currently being utilized at some level.
Is Lincoln Way still considered a prime commercial place to build? I know that, you know, a lot of that focus has gone down to South Duff.
Yeah.
Is Lincoln Way still considered a desirable place to have a business?
I would offer that it's finally becoming a desirable place. You know, I think probably 40 years ago, that was the corridor.
Right.
And Duff has certainly been the it place here the last probably 15 to 20 years or so. Now that Duff appears to be, you know, it's harder to find a space on Duff. I believe you're going to see more redevelopment along the Lincoln Way corridor, particularly around downtown.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And earlier when we were speaking privately, you mentioned also the desire to use Lincoln Way to connect downtown and campus town a little bit. Can you speak a little bit about that?
You're really going to get me going on a Monday morning here. Yeah, you know, I really believe that if we can make that gap between Iowa State University and downtown more attractive. That doesn't mean that the homes that are there aren't attractive. Just the landscape and that kind of that strip of real estate. If we could make that more inviting, it would make campus and downtown feel a whole lot closer.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to change the distance. We all know that, but I think it would certainly give you the perception of, downtown's just over there. It's easy to get there. You know, I talk a lot about to different groups. If you were going to push a child in a stroller, or if you were going to ride your bike, I don't know that you'd really want to ride on that strip of real estate between downtown and campus on Lincoln Way.
Mm-hmm.
The traffic moves fairly fast. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of it, and the sidewalks aren't probably what would be the most inviting.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, even though a lot of other alternative routes have been built now in Ames, Lincoln Way is still kind of the backbone, kind of feels like the backbone of the town.
You know, it's like going on campus and you see all these sidewalks. They're really nice,
mm-hmm.
and there's always a path that's been worn through by the students that's a little shorter. I think the shortest point between campus and downtown is Lincoln Way. And so people are going to continue to want to go that way.
Right.
We need to make it more inviting.
Yeah. Fun fact, I used to be a park ranger. That shorter path is called the Desire Line.
There you go.
That's the technical term for that.
And you're seeing a lot of redevelopment across the country in university towns. West Lafayette, Indiana right now, there's a street called State Street. And they've got the Restate Project. And they're reinvigorating State Street.
Mm-hmm.
And they're putting the infrastructure and the amenities in that we're talking about now, you know, dedicated pedestrian and bike lanes that are separated from the road, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean you're taking some more right away? I don't know. It might. And as you redevelop that corridor, making those improvements so that it's easier.
Small things can make a big difference.
Absolutely.
And before you go, Dan, talk a little bit about 2017. What's in store?
You know, 2017 It's hard not to be enthused and excited about the Ames in 2017 and beyond. You know, the continued discussion we've just had about Lincoln Way. I think we're going to see opportunities for development and increased density particularly in the downtown area along Lincoln Way. I think mm-hmm. we'll see some action on the area of annexation east of town. We'll see the completion of many of the airport improvements. As a chamber, we're going to launch a number of new leadership speaker series mm-hmm. and programs in the new year that we're really excited about. Gosh, what else?
Are these speaking series, is this going to be a public event?
You know, for the most part, our events are for our members. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as an example, our annual luncheon is coming up in February. We've got a terrific speaker by the name of John Gordon who's coming in. And we're opening that up to everybody. You mm-hmm. know, we like him so much, we want people to hear him. Mm-hmm. And so that's February 7th. It'll be at Cornerstone Church. They've got a wonderful venue out there. We're hoping to sell 1,000 tickets to this event. It's a lunchtime speaker, and we think it's going to be a whole lot of fun.
And who is he?
John Gordon is a speaker that a motivational speaker, works a lot with a lot of athletes, a lot of coaches.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
If you are familiar with the University of Alabama football coach Nick Saban, he's a colleague to Nick Saban and talks to him routinely and talks to a wide variety of corporate groups and boards of directors and things like that. And so we think John will do a good job. We're excited to have him come to the market, and we're looking forward to that on February 7th. Mm-hmm. I should also mention it's hard to talk about anything we do without not talking about the Ames Main Street Farmers Market. You know, we just finished our sixth year. Lojean Peterson does a masterful job as market manager, and it's continued to grow and evolve to be a real shining star in the portfolio of things that people get to do in Ames.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. We've been speaking with Dan Culhane, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for being with us, Dan, and thank you for your support for Community Radio, too. We really appreciate it.
Hey, happy holidays. Thank you.
Happy holidays.
You've been listening to Local Talk on Community Radio at KHOI. I've been one of your hosts today, Joe Lynch, here with Ursula Rudenberg. Today you've heard from Josie Stalen from MICA, the food pantry of Mid-Iowa Community Action. You've also heard from John Whitrig of J&P Chestnut Orchard in Winfield, Iowa, and Dan Culhane, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Chamber of Commerce. Also, we had Vaughn Kettleson of Carroll Broadcasting. Elwin Taylor provided us with a weather report.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. All of us on the KHOI team wish again to express our very sincere and heartfelt appreciation for the support that you have shown us and for your part in the success of our end-of-the-year funding campaign. If you've contributed or if you've contributed to the original matching fund, you made it possible for us to reach our goal. If you have not yet contributed, you still can. We'd love it if you would. In fact, we ask you to please consider doing so before the end of the year by going to khoifm.org to donate online. That's khoifm.org. Help us reach 30,000.
Remember that Local Talk is archived at khoifm.org. So if there's anything there you want to go back to and hear again, you can find it at khoifm.org. KHOI is also streaming live at khoifm.org. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. You can also listen to it online at khoifm.org and find links to the information we give during the program. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at recording, we'll train you. Come and join our Local Talk team.
Remember, you are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Please become a member sponsor by going to khoifm.org to donate or to find our address. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.
Hello, this is Andrew Williams. I'm the 50th new member of KHOI Radio.
Thank you, Andrew.
And there's room for more, too, so come and join all the fun at KHOI, listener-supported radio.